We welcome everybody to our class today. I'm taking a visual poll here to see who had an umbrella and who didn't. I can see Sam didn't. He's cleaning his glasses off there. The new ones have windshield wipers, Sam. We're going to turn our attention back to the book of Job today. And I have put our little chart that we asked you to look at last week here, with the idea, with the presence of evil in the world and the claim that God, a righteous and all-powerful God, rules the world. People have always philosophically discussed the problem of evil with these three points: the problem of evil with relation to God. If righteous people or apparently righteous people suffer, The philosophical discussion has been that there are only three possible explanations. Either God is not almighty after all, because some things happen that a good and powerful God wouldn't allow, that the thinking goes. Or God is not completely just, because he has all power, and yet he allows people who are completely and totally innocent to suffer. Or man is not after all innocent. No matter how righteous he may appear on the surface to us. Now that still leaves obviously some great difficulties. For one thing, we have the disparity between how evil, even if man's not innocent, then how evil he might appear to be, how innocent he might appear to be compared with the gravity of the terrible suffering that might come. And beyond that, what about little babies who are born with terrible problems, certainly not caused by themselves? Well, last week, just in what we have studied so far, we have noticed that there are at least two factors running in the background here that don't fit in that. There are at least two intrusions into this neat line of argument that's here. The first one is that God... Well, let's say it this way. The first one is that there is an adversary. The adversary is active in this book. We found out that this is where Satan, the adversary, does his work. The adversary, the adversary does not have all power. He is limited in what he can do by God, and yet he is certainly at work. He is certainly active. He means no good for man or God. The other thing is that's running underneath the surface here is that God is active, is at work, even if it doesn't appear to be so, protecting the relationship with man that he wants to have. And that relationship is one in which man, what God is seeking is for man to be able to love him so much that he will be loyal to God even when apparently man is getting nothing out of it at the moment. The same way you love your 2-year-old or whatever, you know, or your 13-year-old or whatever it is. Where in the immediate sense, there is no gratification, it seems like, and yet in long term there is. So that's where we have come so far. We started by showing that in philosophical discussions through the centuries, this is how people have tried to reason about God's sovereign rule while there is evil and injustice in the world. Job has already shown us two factors that that have not been a part of that discussion, and they're very important. That's kind of where we've said so far. Appreciate you guys being here. This has been already quite a busy weekend here, and we've got a great day planned for today. I understand that the ladies' activity yesterday went great. Thanks to all of you who were involved in that. And we expect to have a good time together in our activities at noontime today. And I hope you'll be able, you can't go golfing anyway today, so you might as well stay with us. And if you didn't, bring your lunch, John, Barney will be glad to share his.
So. I will. Okay.
I'll guess it looks like certain possession that he's going across the park.
Is that right? Yeah, there was several. John has already offered the opinion that it's a terrible day for a picnic, so much of our planning here. We have some folks, she's up here, Becky. We have some folks that we want to remember in our prayer today. Brian is going to lead us in a second. But if you haven't heard, I think most of us know this, Brother Troy Luna passed away this week in the memorial service for Troy. It'll be a graveside tomorrow at 1 o'clock at Greenlawn North, I believe over at Greenlawn Cemetery, I believe is the right time. Also, Joe just told me a few minutes ago that Brother Elvis Denny passed away of his illness. I think it was Friday, is that right?
Saturday.
Okay. And do you guys know the details about the service for Elvis?
This station will be today from 3 to 5 p.m. And the funeral will be in the morning at 9:30 a.m. Sunset Church of Christ.
And where is the visitation going to be?
It's going to be at Greenlawn South.
Okay. All right. Elvis, a fine man and a one-of-a-kind character, and we'll miss him.
Is there a visitation for Troy?
Yes, Donnie.
I just told me the statement that I was in reviewing at, I believe it was one, and that's going to bring on North. There will be visitation with the people who come on.
Okay. Okay. No formal visitation. Yeah. Anybody else with a prayer need now, or anything that we should include in our prayer today? You should remember the church here and our elders as they work through that process. Casey, you have an appointment tomorrow? Okay. And does Seth know this? Okay. Casey is on the front row because of all the things I've learned about her family while Seth has been in Kate's class. all of these families who have kids in that class, we keep notes. It's not what the kids say about them, it's what they tell us about your family. Hope things go well, and I'm sure they will, and we'll look forward to meeting the. We expect you to have a baby here next week. Any other prayer needs that we have? That's great. Very good. It's amazing what happens when you all don't have anywhere else you can go. Elena Stockstill is flying out today for Kenya, and our sister Ann Thiessen is flying out tomorrow for Malawi, so we want to remember them. Anything else?
Marty's driving her to St. Louis right now. They're in her prayers in
the southern. Who is going to St. Louis?
Marty is driving Elena to St. Louis.
All right. They're driving to St. Louis right now. Teresa? Oh, thank you from Teresa's paternal grandmother, right? Yeah, is dealing with cancer problems, and we want to remember her in our prayer. She lives in what town in Arkansas? Wiener. Okay. Anything else? All right.
You would help. Father in heaven, we are thankful to be here today to read and study your word. We're thankful that You've loved us so much, give us a church, we can come together, worship you, encourage one another. Father, at this time, the elders are making decisions for the congregation, and we'd ask that you especially watch over them at this time as they consider additions to the eldership. Help them to lead in a way that would be pleasing in your sight. Oh, we have several on our hearts this morning. Several families that have lost loved ones. The Troy Luna family, the Elvis Denny family. We ask that you would watch over them and their trials and their suffering. We have some that are traveling. Please keep them safe and be your will. Those with cancer, those with children on the way. Just be it to all of us and those that were mentioned this morning. Be with us through this time of study that we rightly divide your word. And as we continue on to worship, we pray that we do things in a way that's pleasing in your sight. We give thanks. We ask these things in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ.
All right, now everybody think about where we are in our discussion of Job and our look at the prologue, as we call the first two chapters. We'll begin now to go a little bit faster, but I want you to remember where we are here. We have Job now secure in his relationship with God, and let me use a different word. Job has let's say it this way, the integrity of his relationship with God. And it's represented in this book by the word that's translated blameless in chapter 1 and verse 1, and then in chapter 1 and verse 8, and then in chapter 2 and verse 3. This term blameless means that he is a true man, that he possesses authenticity, that his faith in God is real. In other words, that's the basic idea of this word, and it becomes a key issue in this book. Now we have the adversary, who we have now heard him speak. What he says is that Job's integrity is not real. That Job is loyal to God only for what reason so far?
All the things he's been blessed with.
All right. Only because of the things that he has been given by God. He's been hedged about by prosperity and by health and wholeness and all of that. So Job has the adversary to say of him that it's only because he's getting it, what he's getting out of it, and in the words of this book, it is not for nothing. So Job has been accused here. Now, God says of Job here that this man is my argument for relationship. This man is my argument that, I'm going to write it a certain way. It's going to sound wrong from what God says, but this man is my evidence that it is possible for a human being to believe I am worth it, and for a human being to maintain his integrity toward me. All right, that is a way for at least understanding kind of where we are now. Now notice, what limitation did God put on the adversary when he delivered Job into the adversary's hand so far? All right, you can touch everything he has, but not him. So right now what we have Job is secure in his integrity or in his relationship with God. Now, look what happens in beginning in verse 13. That's where we are. Notice that it's verse 13, there was how many days? A day. So there is here, first off, a suddenness in what's happening, and all at once thing about what's about to happen. And I'd like you to notice that it is also from every direction. And I'm hoping this helps us to visualize what we're about to see. In verse 14, there comes a messenger to Job, and he speaks to him about the oxen and the donkeys, and the Sabaeans fell upon them. The Sabaeans came from the south. And they strike down the servants of Job, all of them, with the edge of the sword, and only this messenger has come upon it. Then notice that verse 16, while he's yet speaking, another one came and said, "The fire of God." What's the fire of God? I should ask Brent and Brenda this one. The lightning. All right. And this comes, servant says that the sheep and the servants who were there were consumed by that, and I alone am left. While he's still speaking, another comes and says, "The Chaldeans formed three groups. They made a raid and took all the camels and the servants who were caring for them, and I've alone escaped." And while he's yet speaking, there comes another, and he says, "Your sons and your daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. The family was one. They were healthy. They were happy, and a great wind came across the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house." This would be, most writers will say, one of the Scirocco winds that came across the desert in terribly destructive force. And it fell on the young people, and they're all dead, and I'm alone escaped to tell. All right. All at once, from every direction and of everything. What did Job lose that day? Everything. Be more specific. I've used that word. Okay. All right. Certainly possessions or property.
This time, that was awesome.
Well, all right, his possessions, property, was his wealth. Pardon?
The same as your broker calling saying your market's crashed and your retirement's gone.
Well, it'd be sort of like that, I guess. this I want you to see, if you think about it, you've used the word wealth. What if I wrote up here his way of life? If you go back to the first part of this chapter, it talks about what all he had, but it talked about his habit of getting together with his family and how careful he was to do all of that. And he has lost now his children, his entire standing is involved in the world, because he was the greatest of the East because of this. So the entire standing that he had as a person has now been destroyed. All right, all in one day. He's lost. Brother Phoenix?
Everything but the restriction.
All right, everything except that one restriction that he, in his person, the devil has not been able to touch yet. Ruth?
He took that slide back to see what.
All right, let's do it. No comment. All right, I see a division arising here. Let's move on. You think about those. Think about the shock of this when things happen in life. There is not only the loss of in terms of things in life, but the shock of it emotionally. And so if I want to begin to keep a running tab of some of the questions that we have raised here while we're going along. And some of the things that are at stake here. We've said that a lot of people treat the entire book of Job with this question: why do bad things happen to good people? I have a book on Job, and it's titled that way. So we'll write that down. Second thing is, will a man serve God for nothing? All right, that's the second thing. Now, we're about to confront a third question in Job's response. Verse chapter 1, verse 20 and 20, well, 20 through 22, all right? Chapter 1, 20 to 22. Travis, read that for us, please.
At this, Job got up and tore his robe and shaved his head. Then he fell to the ground in worship and said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will depart. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised." In all of this, Job did not sin by charging God with wrongdoing.
All right, isn't that an amazing statement? Wow. Notice that first thing that has stricken Job in verse 20 is what? What kind of state is he in at verse 20? Shock, but also mourning or grief. There is deep grief that has struck him now, and there has to be such an understatement in verse 20. You can't. People have lost. Some of you in this class have suffered the awful loss of a mate or a child. And that kind of grief does not go away, does it? It's an unimaginable burden. This happened to this man all at once. Now, his statement in verse 21 expresses an amazing devotion to God. Are we all agreed to that? Blessed be the name of the Lord. What an amazing statement. There is a question implied in Job's saying in verse 21, an extremely important part of this discussion, which is very seldom, if ever, noted. I want you to think about verse 21. What question, with regard to why bad things happen or why righteous people suffer, what question is raised in verse 21, if you think about it, that is seldom a part of this discussion? All right, if God's so good, why does he take away that? I'm going to include that in this here. If God is so good, why does he take things away? I know this is it's not a specific enough question, but I want you to think about it, because what I'm about to say, I think, is an important part of the story of this book. And look at it. What does Job say before he says, "The Lord has taken away"? All right.
I got somewhere to go.
All right. What?
He blamed all this on the Lord.
All right, he still believed in the providential control of God, obviously. He still is maintaining his devotion to God. But the question is, that's seldom discussed, is this one. Why do good things happen? You notice how easily the adversary causes us to overlook this part of the discussion. Where did Job get all of the camels and sheep and herds and the 10 children, the 7 sons and 3 daughters? We just assume that all of those good gifts are ours by right. That somehow or another, if God is good, these things belong to us by right. And you notice in particular how much a part of American culture this is. 3 or 4 years ago, Rob went to Bible camp with us. And I assigned him to teach a class that had something to do I don't remember exactly what the title of the class was, but I remember him telling me that he introduced it by having the kids in the class to list for him all of the rights that they have as citizens of this land. Boy, they came up with a long list. And then he asked them to write down what responsibilities they individually had as a citizen of this country. He said they ended up with a long list over here and just one or two lines over here. They couldn't think of that. Now, the point I'm getting at is Job's first words are, "The Lord gave." I came into the world. Who gave me life? God did, all right? What did I have when I came into the world? Well, I had my birthday suit, you know, that's the way we say it. So where did I get everything else that I've ever possessed? That's Job's point. Now, that begins to put the things that are spoken of in this book at least in a little bit of perspective for us. And let's just see what Job ever says, why are all these things happening to me? And he does, man, starting in chapter 3. Before he ever says that, he says, I've been given a whole lot, and I'm so thankful for it. And some days we can't see that, I understand. But that's an important part of the story. Now, what New Testament statement does the saying, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return," what New Testament saying does that remind you of? Okay, my Bible told me that. All right, I'll give you a hint from 1 Timothy. From 1 Timothy 6.
What verse?
All right, verse 7 and 8. We brought nothing into the world, nor can we take anything out of the world. That is a self-evident truth, isn't it? We can't argue with anybody about all of that. Now, so far then, Job has experienced loss, he's experienced grief, but he maintains the security of his relationship with God. So, the devil was defeated, and that's the end of the story. A battle has been won. This day was survived. In the story. No, that's not how the adversary operates, is it? So in verse 2, again, or chapter 2, again, there was a day when the sons of God presented themselves before the Lord, and the inspector-in-chief, as he's made himself, of men, appears before the Lord, and the Lord asks him where he's come from, and notice the adversary does not believe his control of things has been injured at all so far by Job. What does the adversary say? Verse 2, the end of the verse. Exactly the same thing as he said in chapter 1, verse 7. The devil can lose battles and not think he's lost anything. He can have a man maintain his integrity and still think that he controls everything there is. Verse 3, God says again, an important part of the statement, Brendan, read for us chapter 2, verse 3, if you will.
The Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? There is no one like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil."
All right, now that part we've already had said back in chapter 1 and verse 8. Now go ahead.
"And he still holds fast his integrity, although you incited me against him to ruin him without cause."
All right, now look at the last part. The first thing is he still holds fast his integrity. That's a crucial issue in this book. If you look up in a concordance the occasions of the word integrity and study them, it'll help you to think about what this book is saying. Now, notice what he says. "Although you incited me against him to destroy him without reason." So did God destroy this? Did God do this to Job or not? Here is the fourth question. Did God do this?
Bill, who's controlling the weather?
Okay. Who is controlling the weather?
Because when it talks about which fire from God is lightning, it's talking about this wind coming along. I mean, the actions of men, the Sabians and the Chaldeans, who's controlling the natural elements?
But even with the actions of men, they could not do those things unless God allowed it. There is such a thing as the passive providence of God, in which things occur in the world which he rules. He allows them for some reason to occur. And that's what I'm asking is the same thing Brendan is asking here. Even with the actions of the evil one, you incited me against him to destroy him. So who did all of these things? The wind, the lightning, the Chaldeans and the Sabaeans. Who did those things to Job? Remember, Job doesn't know about all of this. So it looks to him exactly like what Brendan just said. That God is responsible for it. That's how these things look to us. I know that's how we feel when tragedy strikes us. My family's been there a few times too, and I think all of us identify with this question. That's why I'm raising the question. My point is that God in one sense allowed it. That doesn't mean he actively caused it. You see what I'm getting at? The adversary is the one God holds responsible for this, if you see.
He holds being responsible, but is he taking responsibility at the same time?
I think he is. I think that's God is saying this. You incited me against him. God felt as if he had allowed it. That's the point. All right, now verse 4. The next part of the accusation comes in. And I wonder if this is where we got the phrase, you have to have skin in the game. I don't know if that's right or not. But look at what this passage says here. Verse 4 and 4, 5, and 6. All right, Randy?
"And Satan answered the Lord and said, skin for skin, yes, all that a man has, he will give for his life. However, put forth thy hand now, and touch his bone and his flesh, he will curse thee to thy face. So the Lord said to Satan, behold, he is in your power, only spare his life."
All right, now then, a drastic step is taken in the story. What is the adversary's accusation this time? All right. The adversary, notice how he takes a person's strength and makes that the basis of, it makes the strength look like a sin. Job has been loyal through all of these losses, So the adversary makes it look like that's because Job is so selfish, he doesn't care if he's lost his children, his sons and his daughters, or his servants, or his flocks and his herds. He's only out for his own benefit, his own physical well-being. He only stays with you because you have struck everybody and everything but him. All right, that is an insidious type of evil, if you think about it, and a slander against God and against Job. It's the explanation of Job's integrity is skin for skin. What's that mean? Well, the skin of all of those animals and the skin of his children and all of that. Job's willing to give all of that up for his skin.
Hurt me, then he'll turn.
All right, that's it. If you let me be dealt with, then he'll turn. All right, so he's God says now, all right, it's in your hand. With what one limitation?
Spare his life.
All right, spare his life. And here's the question of this book. Was God's limitation that Satan could do everything but spare his life a blessing or a curse? Was Job always glad that God had put that limitation on him, on the adversary? Eddie?
Not to answer the question you just asked, but the prior question, did God control the weather? Did he cause this and so forth? Well, the answer in the verse we just looked at, Satan says, God, you strike him, and he will turn from you. But as we read further down, Satan left, and then Satan struck him.
All right. And in verse 6 there that we just read, he is in your hand. So God allows Satan to exercise some effect or influence or power, okay?
When God allows Satan to be allowing him the power over nature to cause people?
I think that's a part of the question that this book raises that doesn't answer. That's a part of the difficulty of it, and I certainly don't have the answer to that. He allowed him in some way to impact Job in ways he would not have ordinarily. I'll say it that way.
Why did he even have to say spare his life? Because if he didn't spare his life, God would win. He would call another one home with Job's integrity. And you would think that would be kind of an unwritten.
All right. Job will ask that question even better than you and I can. And that's the part of this book I want to save that one, because that's what the conversation will be about. Yes. Back and forth.
And for us, because we can see and go through all this and see.
Yes, and for us. These two chapters are the for us part of it that Job and his friends didn't have at the time. So that helps us to learn. I want to, real quickly, before the second bell gets us. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job. There have been all kinds of discussion about exactly what all these were. Some of the descriptions of the maladies that Job suffered are terrible. He's already lost his children and all of his possessions, struck him with loathsome sores from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And he took a piece of broken pottery with which to scrape himself while he sat in the ashes. A lot of people think that Job was like a throwaway in the trash heap here, that the ashes were out there at the dump. And Job says some think that the ashes here simply represent the grief and affliction and maybe repentance or whatever, but I think that Job is regarded here as a cast-off, an outcast. Now, his wife says to him, do you still hold fast your integrity? Notice that God said Job holds fast his integrity, chapter 2, verse 3. Notice now, Satan is raising the suggestion that it's not worth it. Curse God and die. And that leads to verse 10, one of the other questions. Shall we receive good from God, and shall we not receive evil? Is our relationship with God such that we'll stay with Him as long as we're getting what we want from it, but the moment we don't, we turn away from Him? See, that's what Satan, that's what the adversary is wanting to prove here. Now, what about Job's wife? What did Job lose there? All right. The support.
And someone else that shares that
fruit. All right. Companionship in the furnace of affliction. All right. Respect. How hard, Brother Feeney?
He who findeth a wife findeth a good thing.
Yeah. How hard should we be on Mrs. Job? Had Job lost anything that day that she hadn't lost?
That's a tough question in a way.
It is a tough question.
You don't think about it, but think about the very same thing what you said, the grief and the things. She just may not have been the strongest Job.
Whose children were they?
Children.
Her way of life has certainly been drastically changed here. Now, her faith, would the agony suffered have been, that Job is suffering now, have been worse for him or for her?
Would it be like us today when we have a person that we love suffering?
Yes, all right. So she is looking at him. All right, now, so you have to think about what we're dealing with here, and a part of this is if you're dealing with this question of relationship with God, can that be maintained when every other relationship has been lost? And can a man maintain his integrity or will he by himself? Well, these are hard questions, aren't they? And that will explain some of what Job says in the conversations ahead. We need to try to move through most of chapters 3 through 5 next week. So please read those passages before class tomorrow. My advice to everybody today is keep a good watch on your lunch. So, Tim, where's your sack lunch? You guys have a good day. Thanks for being with us.